Okay, ladies and gentlemen, let's begin. This summer we've been giving a series of shiurim or lectures about what we call halachic men, and this is series 5, and what we have been doing is we're discussing various figures. We spoke about the Rif, Rabbi Yitzchak Alfasi, the Rush, Rabbeinu Asher, and now we're talking about probably the most famous Jewish figure, who is the Rambam, Maimonides. And last time we learned, which was 2 weeks ago, because last week there was like this massive storm that I didn't want to go out. So last time we learned, we spoke about a little bit regarding the Rambam and the Rambam's biography, when he was born, etc. The Rambam died in the year 1204. The Rambam was born probably in 1135. We have a lot of information about the Rambam. He's quite a popular figure. What I want to talk about tonight is the code of the Rambam, the Mishneh Torah. The Mishneh Torah is arguably the greatest book of the last millennium. Let me just give you a story. Dr. David Berger likes to tell the story that I believe was the Haaretz newspaper. In the year 2000, Haaretz decided to ask a group of Jewish intellectuals, professors, community leaders, etc., what was the most important Jewish book of the last 1,000 years? Now that's like a thought-provoking question. Between the year 1000 and the year 2000, which Jewish book is the most important? And you know, different people came up with various suggestions. Some people suggested like Theodor Herzl, the Judenstadt. I don't think so. Others say that maybe Rashi is the most important Jewish book. But there was quite a few votes for the Rambam as being the most important Jewish book. And the reason why Dr. Berger himself is in favor of the Rambam being the most important Jewish book of the past millennium is because the Rambam not only tells you what you have to do, but the Rambam tells you what you have to believe. The Rambam laid out a series of 13 principles, which are the 13 principles of faith. Whenever we convert someone, these are the things you have to accept, these 13 principles. And not only did the Rambam lay them out in his commentary on the Mishnah, but the Rambam included that in his halachic book, in the Mishneh Torah, in a few different places. The Rambam in Hilchos Tshuva, oh, excellent. The Rambam in Hilchos Tshuva and elsewhere, the Rambam tells us that these are the things you have to believe. Now, what that means, and we'll try to talk about this later this evening, is the Rambam incorporates philosophy into halacha in an unprecedented sort of way. Not only unprecedented, never repeated. That's what the Rambam did. So now let's kind of go where I want to go with this. One of the advantages of teaching is that you kind of set the agenda, which is like so much fun. Right, Gila? Like, it's like amazing. Like you're up there in the classroom. You could do whatever the heck you want. It's awesome. Now, the Rambam wrote what is called a code of Jewish law. No? It's a code. It's not a compilation. What is the difference between a code and a compilation? All the works before the Rambam, and probably the majority of works after the Rambam, are compilations. The Rambam is a code. What is a code? It's a system, a law. Let's be more precise. What?
It's making it the standard.
It's making it the standard. And it is offering one opinion. Do this. And it's not telling you how I got to that opinion. No? Yeah. The Rambam does not tell me, well, the Gemara says this, and we have this question, and we answer it that way. The Rambam says, do this. End of conversation. Right? A code, it's almost like, again, you could pull any legal code off the shelf, and it will tell you, do this, don't do that. Right? That's a code. And that's what the Rambam is. Now, as a code, the Rambam does not cite sources, because it doesn't matter where it came from. What matters is do this, not that. And the Rambam does not give us names of authorities who said this. The Rambam does not tell me that, oh, Rabbi Meir said this, and therefore we do this. No? Names don't matter in the Rambam. In every other Jewish book, every other Jewish halachic text, the Rush and the Rif and the Gaonim, there are names. There are no names in the Rambam, aside from the fact that occasionally the Rambam will say, all the Gaonim, all my predecessors said this, and I disagree with them. Right? But that's also not names in the specific sense. That's saying, all my predecessors are wrong. Right? So now, why is it that in the history of halacha, generally speaking, works of compilations? A compilation, I'm using that term, and this comes from Professor Isidore Twersky in his book, An Intro to the Code of Maimonides. Why is it that all Jewish books are compilations rather than codes? Who wants to take a stab at this one?
You can't get two Jews to agree on anything.
You can't get two Jews to agree. Okay, that's
because
correct, but almost cynical.
Question, who's the authority?
Oh, okay.
Does anybody have the whatever to assume the authority?
So, right, who's the authority? Jewish law operates with this amorphous term called Mesorah. Mesorah means the transmission, the line. And you know what? I could be a great guy, but if I am cut off from that line of my predecessors, you will discount me, you will throw me away. Right? To have standing, you've got to be part of that line of transmission. So every book of Jewish law, and this goes until today. No, here we have a lot of books of Jewish law on the shelf here. Pull anyone out, okay? Mishnah Berurah, common book of Jewish law. No, what does he do? He quotes sources. And the Magen Avraham says this, and the Taz says this, and the Beis Yosef says this, and this, and this, and this. Because that gives you authority. The Rambam does not give names or sources. Why not? Why do you think Maimonides does not give names? You have to realize that this is earth-shaking.
Yeah.
And then we got to ask why. Why is it that the Rambam does not tell me where he got it from and who said it, especially because the way you get it from and who said it is so important in Jewish law as a general construct. Who wants to take a stab at this one?
Intellectual arrogance.
What?
Intellectual arrogance.
Okay, arrogance. So you are part of there is a group out there who feels that the Rambam is the most arrogant person out there. By the way, look at the Rambam's first words of his introduction to the Sefer HaMitzvot. Amar harav hagadol maranav rabbanam Moshe eved ha'elokim. Says the great rabbi, Moshe, the servant of God, the son of Rabbi Maimon. Now he's speaking about himself. He calls himself. He speaks about himself in the third person. So say Zarathustra. Who is it?
Zarathustra.
It sounds something like that. Why does Gila?
I mean, it's harder to argue with him. There's nothing to source. Like you can't say, but I read. You're like, you don't even know where you have to know.
So you can't argue with it. And it's authoritative. It is straightforward. There is no room. If I give you a source, so then what you're going to do is you're going to pull the book off the shelf and say, oh, maybe you could read the source differently. If I tell you that, oh, this statement comes from Rabbi Shmendrick, you'll say, oh, Rabbi Shmendrick, what a minor leaguer, the guy. Right? So what I can do in order to create authority is I could say, right, no sources, no nothing. This creates a sense of absolute authority. This is what the Rambam writes. There's a famous letter that the Rambam wrote to Rabbi Pinchas, who was the dayan, who was the judge in Alexandria. And in that letter, the Rambam writes that I'm not giving sources to convey authority. The reason I don't give sources is that creates authority. And the Rambam is trying, like we mentioned last week, the Rambam is operating in a world that the Gaonic the Gaonic world no longer exists. For nearly 1,000 years, there were two sources of Jewish authority around 50 miles away from each other. One is in Sura, the other is in Pumbedita. It's Fallujah, Iraq. It's the hellhole of this planet, right? That was the source of the Jewish universe. And all questions went there. But then Fallujah begins to, right, get bombed, and there's nothing left in Fallujah. So the Rambam is creating new authority, and to create new authority, he doesn't want, right? He doesn't want anyone to argue, so he says, do this, do this, do this. That's what he writes to Rabbi Pinchas. But what we'll see in a few minutes is the Rambam has a number of other explanations. Like all great people, he is complicated. Bob?
If we're talking about a guy perplexed, if that's the correct translation of the title of his great book, it's not a guide to the another word for perplexed is the perplexities is puzzled. He's not saying a guide to try to understand the puzzle. He's saying to a guide for the perplexed. People who are confused.
So let me just clarify one thing. The guide for the perplexed is the Rambam's work of philosophy. Right? What I'm discussing tonight is the Rambam's work on Jewish law, is the code of Maimonides, which is called the Mishneh Torah, the Yad HaChazaka, not the guide. What we'll talk about, I hope, as the evening goes on, is there's a great deal of overlap between those two books. You would think that Maimonides, the philosopher, is a completely different person than Maimonides, the lawgiver, Maimonides, the posek, the rabbi, who's also, there's a third, right? It's unbelievable. Like, what's it called? Multiple personality disorder. And the rabbi was also Maimonides, the doctor out there, who wrote some like 40 books on medicine, right? And like, never the twain shall meet. That's what you would think. And what we'll try to develop later tonight is that there's at least a great deal of overlap between Maimonides, the philosopher, and Maimonides, the halakhic authority. But we are not talking about the guide to the perplexed.
The reason I ask the question, and maybe relevant to what you're discussing, is that his intent is to if you say being authoritative in the code, that to me seems to fall in line with that.
So it could be, although the guide to the perplexed historically was written to one particular student, and whether the Rambam intended that that should become something for the popular consumption or not is worth discussing. But I don't know.
So the story. Yeah.
Right. I'm going to ask Frida before you, Gila.
Go ahead.
No, it's just, in line with the question you asked before about why no sources, why just say this is it, if he's writing it for just one student, that might be more reasonable. Well, you asked what to do. This is what to do.
But the code is not written for one student. The code is Rambam's magnum opus. The guide is written to one student.
I'm sorry.
Right? But the code is written for Klal Yisrael. In fact, the code is written, and the Rambam sent it to different communities, and he asked that they transcribe it. And the Rambam himself was almost like a micromanager. He says, I'm sending you a copy. I want you to copy it and send it to this and this and this and this place and whatever. That's how we know about the distribution of the Rambam based on the time that various copies were made in Yemen and in other places in southern France. And we have dates of when the Rambam's book got to various places. Hello, Gila.
I feel like this is like a double-edged sword. Like there's something beautiful, like he re-centralized something that had been decentralized. But I don't know, part of the beauty of halacha is that just learning Torah is that you can never be done because there's always another opinion. And he took that away.
Right, so the Rambam is taking away what we would call the multivocality of the text, right? Usually the advantage, one of the reasons I love learning Gemara is because it's multivocal. Yeah. And they have so many different voices that come to play, and that's not what you get in the Rambam. You get multivocality in the Rambam when you look at the commentaries on the Rambam.
But that's
right? And that's moving away right? It's like centripetal force.
Yeah.
It's like moving away, and that's Chaim Soloveitchik's term for it, actually. But okay, so why is it that Rambam doesn't give sources? One reason is to create a sense of authority. The Rambam writes in this underlined section that I give for you, source one. By the way, I wrote episode number 3. It's really episode number 4. You'll have to forgive me for this. But the Rambam writes, and this is his introduction to the Sefer HaMitzvot. The Rambam writes, first of all, that I am writing this book, and it's going to include all of the laws of the Torah and the Mitzvot. Right? The Sefer HaMitzvot is a work that the Rambam wrote before the Code, where the Rambam lists the 613 Mitzvot, based on principles, what's in and what's out. He has various rules. And the Rambam tells me that I have to give you this entire list of who are the Chachmei HaMesorah until we get to this point, in order that the book should be accepted. However, when I wrote the actual book, I did not tell you that so-and-so says this, and so-and-so says that, and his last four words that are underlined is Kol Zeh Lebakashat HaKitzur. Right? All of this is because brevity is so important. I think in one of the Shakespearean plays, there's a long sonnet that begins, "Brevity is the soul of wit," and goes on for like 40 lines. No?
By definition, it's
40.
What? The sonnet has 40 lines.
No, it's not in the sonnet. I believe it's in one of the plays. One of the plays, yeah, it's a soliloquy. It goes on and on and on and on. Like, never stops. But the Rambam is saying, "Bakashata kitzur," because I want to be brief. So therefore, I will not give names. Now, part of the idea of being brief is something that we spoke about last time we learned. The Rambam wanted his book to be memorized by everyone. Now, if you want people to memorize your book, it can't be too wordy. Right? So you write briefly, and that way people are committed to memory. That's what the Rambam intended. That's the goal. So that's another reason, the brevity. There's a third reason that I want to talk about, which is in the introduction to the Shmoneh Prakim. I give it to you here in English translation. The Shmoneh Prakim is, the Rambam wrote a separate introduction to his commentary on the Mishnah of Avot. The Rambam felt Avot is different than all of the Mishnayos, its ethical principles, and I'll give you a separate introduction. And the Rambam tells you that why I feel that Avot is so important, because if you want to be a righteous person, you should do things of Avot, etc. Begin like four lines from the bottom. Know, however, that the ideas presented in these chapters and the following commentary are not my own invention. Neither did I think out the explanations contained therein, but I have gleaned them from the words of the wise occurring in the Midrashim and the Talmud and other of their works, as well as from the words of the philosophers, ancient and recent, and also from the words of various authors, as one should accept the truth from whatever source it proceeds. That's a famous line in the Rambam, that wherever truth comes from, you have to accept it. Sometimes I give the statement in full, sometimes I don't, but the Rambam goes on, he tells me, I don't mention the authority because I want to be service to the reader and to elucidate to him the thoughts hidden in this tractate. Meaning, if I tell you the name, you might be inclined to agree or to disagree, to accept or to reject that particular statement. I want you to view the statement as it is. Is it true or not? Judge it on its own qualifications. I'm not going to tell you who said anything, says the Rambam. Because if I tell you who says what, you're going to say, oh, wow, the person who said that has a beard. Amazing. The person who said that is clean shaven. Right? Whatever you're going to say, and that will distort, right? That will distort whether you accept it as true. So the Rambam, for these three reasons, does not give us the names. He doesn't tell us the sources. And the history over here goes like this. You know, the Rambam had a major opponent. I want to talk about him probably next week. The opponent was called the Ravid. Rabbi Abraham ben David of Paskiers. He died in 1197. Right? That's the Ravid. Paskiers is a small town in the French Riviera. Okay, that's the Ravid. The Ravid disagrees with the Rambam quite often. And not only does the Rabbi disagree with the Rabbi decides to pick a bone with the Rambam's introduction. Okay? This takes talent, by the way. You didn't even say anything, no? It's like the teacher. I remember in yeshiva in Israel, like we had the Israeli shiurim, like meat markets. You know what I'm talking about? The guys like screaming at each other, and they're like, the Rebbe like walked in, and like some guy starts asking a question, like some guy's answering the question, and like the Rebbe's like, Ani lo amarti af milah. Like, I haven't said anything. Like, what are you fighting about? And that's what's going on over here. The Ravid is arguing on the Rambam's introduction. And he writes, and I underline this. This is the Rambam's introduction to the Mishnah Torah. I forgot to highlight it as such. But the Ravid writes, Amar Avram, Savar Natakim Velotikim. This guy thinks he's improving stuff by not quoting sources, etc. But he don't improve nothing. Basically, the Ravid says that the Rambam is disagreeing with all his predecessors by not giving sources, and there's an advantage of giving a source, because you know who said it, and therefore you could disagree. Because I'm greater than the guy who said it. And then the Ravid continues, and he says, and by the way, I don't know who this dude Maimonides is, and maybe I'm greater than him. That's like the next line in the Ravid, no? Unbelievable. So the Ravid is basically saying, hey Rambam, right? It's kind of taking the argument and flipping it on its head. Rambam, you're arguing that it's going to be more authoritative by not quoting names. Well, I want you to quote names so I could disagree with you. Right? In other words, they're not speaking the same language over here. Right? The Ravid's argument is you should quote names so I could disagree with you is precisely why the Rambam doesn't want to quote names. Good?
Maybe this is not a fair criticism of that. In the sense that he still had his major enemies, but I guess not on the Mishnah Torah. He had his major enemies for at least Marnie Guzman, which is different.
He has major...
Like Rambam, like he's saying, I couldn't disagree with you. And, you know, was he ultimately successful in his mission? Yes, we know it, because we still have it. But immediately, is it clear that he's effective in codifying everything?
Right, so the funny thing about the Rambam is as follows. Was the Rambam effective or not? So the answer is maybe. In other words, the Rambam was very effective. It became a major source of knowledge. It was not effective in the way the Rambam wanted it to be effective. The Rambam wanted us not to have libraries of Jewish texts at home. The Rambam wanted us to only have a set of Tanakh and Rambam. You don't need any other books. My book will do everything for you. And the Rambam called his book Mishneh Torah. Right? We spoke about this last time we learned. Mishneh Torah means it's a summary of Torah. Because the Rambam says, my book has everything in it. Now, was the Rambam successful about that? Absolutely not. Right? The Rambam, look at our library. And this library ain't... What? Well, the Rambam wanted people to have free time to study philosophy. And if you have too many Torah texts out there, you can't have time to think about the important ideas in life, which are metaphysics.
No wonder people got mad at him.
Yes!
Duh!
Yes! But the amazing thing about the Rambam is he in no way reached what he wanted to reach, but he was nonetheless unbelievably successful. But sometimes you find success in ways that you didn't think you would find it. Right? And that's what's going on here.
Yeah.
Right? That was what was going on here. Rabbi Wurzberger told me a story years ago that Rav Soloveitchik at one point was approached by the president of the Reform Congregation in Boston, that the president apparently had lost a relative and he wanted Rabbi Soloveitchik to learn with him in memory of this relative. So the Rav started learning with him, and they had a group of fellows who would learn with the Rav, apparently once every couple of weeks, whatever, they'd get together and they would learn together. And on one occasion, you know, the Rav commented, you know, Saul went looking for some donkeys and he found a kingdom. And I was looking for a few dollars for my Maimonides school, and I found a kingdom that he established this very positive, fruitful relationship with these people. And it really became a very meaningful thing for the Rav. Rabbi Wurzberger told me that story years ago. Rabbi Wurzberger used a more choice word for donkeys than I just used because it's recorded. Okay, but that's the basic point. Let's go on. So the Rambam does not quote sources. The Ravid says the Rambam should quote sources. Next source over here. This is a letter of the Rambam. A letter of the Rambam, volume 2, number 28. It's in English. A judge came to me with pages in my book. The pages from Hilchot Rotzeach, from the laws of murder. He shows me a section. He says, read it. And I read it to him. He says, well, what's your question? He says, well, where they come from? So I said to him, oh, it's from the relevant section in the Gemara, either from Sanhedrin or Makos or whatever. So the guy says, well, I looked through all those sections. I couldn't find it. So the Rambam says, oh, you know what? Maybe it's from Gittin. And he pulls a Gittin off the shelf and they flip through Gittin and can't find it. And then the Rambam remembered, oh, you know what? It's in Yevamos. And he found the Gemara in Yevamot, etc. So here's the story. A guy, a student of the Rambam, comes and he brings him the Rambam. And he says, where is it from? And the Rambam can't find the source of the Rambam. Right? That's an unbelievable story for him. Right on, it's there. So the Rambam writes, I'm always worried when people come to me and ask, where are these things said? Sometimes I can answer the question immediately, in this place. Other times I cannot say. I cannot remember the source without searching. I'm greatly pained by this. I say to myself, if I am the author and the source escapes me, what about the rest of the people? I regret that I did not do the following, which now, if God lets, I will do, even though it is a lot of work. Every halacha that comes from elsewhere, I will give its source. For example, in the case of Shabbat, if it's in Shabbat or Erev, I won't give the source. But if it comes from Masechet Avodah Zarah, or it comes from Pesachim, or Krisos, etc., then I will give the source. So the Rambam says, I feel bad that I didn't give the sources, and if I'd have time, I'd write another book wherein I would give the sources. Now,
why couldn't you just annotate the Mishnah Torah?
So why can't you just annotate the Mishnah Torah? Why does the Rambam want another book? That's a good question. That's what I wanted to ask. And how are you going to answer that question based on what we said before? It would remove the authoritativeness of the text if you have the source in the text. If I have a separate volume, so I look at this volume, I'm like, oh, this is it. Then, okay, you want to find it, you pull out another volume. This original text is still authoritative. If I include the sources in the original text, that will detract from the authoritativeness of the text. Again, this is Schwartz speaking. I might be wrong. I don't know. But it's really interesting that the Rambam himself felt bad that he didn't give sources. Right? And he's going to write a separate book of sources instead of annotating the original book. Bob?
He never lived to do it.
What?
He never
got there. He died. Right. But he planned on doing this. We have the date. I don't remember the date of this, but we have the date when this letter was written. Yeah?
I am perplexed. Everybody, in terms of Judaism, in terms of religious writing, I can't speak, but I'm reminded of the law, and you mentioned, referred to it also, that when the American law, it's the Supreme Court makes a decision, it's very, very rare for a justice to write, whether it's dissent or affirming a decision, to say, not the court of source, but to say, this is because of this, this is because of that, not quoting sources. And I'm sure it's true in the religion.
Right.
That why this process is called a source? Because, as you said, it gives them authority. So by what authority does the Rambam not have to quote the authority?
So that's the amazing thing. So the Rambam, first of all, felt that I don't need to quote the sources of every law because I begin my book by giving a list of all the sources, of all the names of the great rabbis in history. So why do I have to say that he said this, he said that? And the Rambam, for a whole host of reasons, made a calculation that I'd rather not quote sources. That is one of the most innovative things of the Rambam. And did it work? No. And the Rambam himself regretted it. Right? But that's what he did.
But 900 years later, almost 800 years, 800 plus years later, we're talking about him. So there obviously is a great, and he, as you said, he's probably considered one of the greatest writers.
So
why?
Absolutely. The way Dr. Soloveitchik says it is that although the Rambam did not meet his intended goals, it was a darn good book. And therefore, it just clicked. He did a really good job. He wrote a really good book. Right? That's basically the way he says it. I don't know. Okay. So here is the thing. Rambam. Rambam has to write a book that includes all the laws of Judaism. Now, in order to do that, what do you have to do? So you have to do a few things. Professor Menachem Elon lists this. First of all, you need to list all the laws in Judaism. Right? So the Rambam, before he wrote the Mishneh Torah, writes the Sefer HaMitzvot, and he lists all 613 commandments. Right? After you list the 613 commandments, what you have to do is you have to classify them. Put them in different categories. And after you classify them, you have to decide any question within each law. And then you have to write it clearly and cogently. Those are the four things that you have to do to write a good text. So, the Rambam, and each thing is kind of daunting, right? To list all of the laws in Judaism, it's a big deal. That's what the Rambam tries to do. He lists all the laws. But then how do you classify them? How do you break down all the laws? So, I have 613 laws. I could have 613 books. Right? Today you have like a book on like every half of a whatever. You could have 613 books. You could do it that way. But we want to group things differently. So how do I group things? So there are two standard ways of grouping things in Judaism. And then the Rambam came up with a third. Right? Standard way of grouping things in Judaism is you follow the order of the Mishnah. The Mishnah has six sections. Zra'im, Moe, Nashim, Nezikim, Kachim, Taharot. You have six orders of Mishnah. And you could break these 613 laws down into six different orders. And that would be very appealing. The Rambam already wrote a commentary on Mishnah. The Rambam is addicted to Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi. In some of his writings, he talks about Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi is awesome and amazing and I love him. So that would make perfect sense. The author of the Mishnah, the redactor of Mishnah, whatever it is, Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi was someone that the Rambam really wanted. However, the Rambam decided not to follow the order of the Mishnah. So it's not broken down into six different groups. He could have followed the order of the Torah and gone in order 613 mitzvot. Right? It's an organizational structure. But he didn't do that either. Instead, the Rambam came up with his own system of classification. There are 14 books of Rambam right over here on the shelf. 14 different books. This is the Rambam's classification. The Book of Mada, Book of Ahava, Book of Zmanim, etc. This is the Rambam's classification. He made it up by himself. He came up with 14 books. He organizes 613 mitzvot and all their derivatives into 14 books. Why the heck would he do that? Why would the Rambam not use a readily available classification system? Instead, he invented it out of whole cloth. Hi, Julian.
It's the Rambam.
But he's the Rambam. Good. And he likes being different.
Correct.
Right. But why? Pachimu.
He's exceeding total control and authority in this moment.
It shows how bold he is. This goes back to Danny's comment at the beginning. It's a degree of arrogance. I could do it better. Right? You know, how does the song go? I could do anything. You can do better. Right?
I can do anything.
Maybe. I don't know.
No, I don't think it's about better. I think it's about establishing authority. And I cannot copy that template.
I don't want to defer to anyone.
Yeah.
Maybe.
I was going to say, maybe it had to do with some idea of some philosophical concept.
Okay.
But I'm looking at this 14 of the mirror, and I don't...
So here's the thing. The Rambam is a philosopher. Good. And philosophers are very into classification. Anyone here who remembers the way Rabbi Schneidman used to give a sermon? Rabbi Schneidman's sermons are, I have three major points that break down into five or three substrates of each of the small points. Right? Am I exaggerating? That is the way philosophers work, right? Philosophers think in a Venn diagram, right? They organize everything. Is that the way of saying it? Philosophers, you're an MIT person, right? So philosophers.
That's not philosophy. Though it does remind, like, I am one to, like, number points in emails sometimes.
So, I mean, there is a certain organizational structure that philosophers want to use that puts things into categories that make sense to them. And they will say that all previous categorical schemes don't make sense, and I have a better one. Good? So the Rambam comes up with his own scheme, and that scheme includes 14 books. Now, the scheme is brilliant. It's brilliant. You see, let's talk about another scheme, Shulchan Aruch, the Torah. The Torah, it has four different books. There's Orach Chaim, which is life, regular daily life. Right? It begins waking up in the morning, and Orach Chaim then goes through the entire day, Shacharit, Mincha, Maariv, you go to sleep, and then it goes through the year, Shabbat, and Yom Tov, etc. That's Orach Chaim. Then there's Shulchan Aruch Evan HaEzer, that deals with all the matters of marriage, and divorce, and Yibum, all the things that are related to matrimony. Holy matrimony, Batman, right? All the things that are related to matrimony are there in Evan HaEzer. And then the Torah, the Shulchan Aruch, has a book called Choshen Mishmat, or the monetary laws. And then there's a book called Yoredeya, which begins with the laws of Kashrut. No? Shchita, Trefot, Basar B'cholav, Bishol Akum. And then we get a problem, because there's a bunch of laws that don't fit in anywhere in those books. And the Shulchan Aruch dumps them all in the last volume of Yoredeya. Oh. They're all dumped there. So last time Yoredeya has laws of Shatnez, and it has laws of Ribbis, and it has laws of Avelus, and it has laws of Nida. Like, it's a hodgepodge.
You could fit some of those into...
You could have. You could have put Nida in marriage law, and you could have put Ribbis in monetary law, but he didn't. And everyone asks the questions. In other words, there is what the what some of the lawyers call a filing problem. Sometimes I have a file cabinet, and I don't know where to put something. So there's a filing problem. When I spoke in Harvard last year, so one of the conversations at this conference I was at was about whether kashrut agencies should include ethical practice and ethical treatment of workers, etc., in their kashrut supervision. So one of the rabbis there was presenting and said, no, but we have laws of kashrut and this is not there. And the other rabbi said, no, but that's just a filing problem. Because there are... clearly laws of how one treats the workers. The fact that it's not put in the area of kashrut doesn't mean it's not a law. No? So the amazing thing is that the Torah's system doesn't really work. Right? It works at three out of the four books, and that fourth book, like, flops. It doesn't work. The Rambam system of 14 books really works. But there are a few problems in the Rambam's classification system. I know time is late, so let's just talk very briefly about some of the problems. Much of what I'm saying now comes from an essay that Dr. Soloveitchik wrote, which is in volume 2 of his collected writings. There is also Professor Tursky's work. He has a little bit about this, and in Chaim Chernovitz's Rav Tzair in Toldos HaPoskim, he has a little bit about this. So there is...
What's the name of the essay in the second volume?
Classification of Maimonides. Oh. It is the most boring title ever. But that's what he calls it. Okay, fine. Now, so the Rambam has 14 books. The Book of Mada, the Book of Knowledge, Book of Love, Book of Zmanim. Let's talk about the Book of Zmanim. Okay, one of these, remember Sesame Street is a kid, one of these things is not like the others, one of these things is, none of you watch Sesame Street?
No.
Remember this, anyone?
No.
One of these things is just not the same. Okay, so in the laws of Zmanim, which thing does not belong? Shabbat. Is Shabbat part of Jewish time? Absolutely. Erevin is connected to Shabbat. Yom Kippur. Yom Tov. Okay, so far so good. Chametz u'matzah, that's good. Shofar, lulav, sukkah, good. Kiddush HaChodesh. Makes sense, right? If anything, Kiddush HaChodesh is slightly problematic because Kiddush HaChodesh should be the beginning of this section. Kiddush HaChodesh is how I declare the new month. If I want to know time, if it's the book of times, I should begin with Kiddush HaChodesh. So that's a problem. Taniyot, that's part of the year. Chanukah and Megillah. Again, the only problem here is it should be Megillah before Chanukah, probably, because Megillah is in Scripture, Chanukah isn't, but okay, the Rambam has Chanukah Megillah. The thing that does not belong at all is Shkalim. Shkalim is about the money that's collected for the temple in Jerusalem when it stood. Well, that should be more in the book of Karbanot, because that money goes for Karbanot. How come that is here in the book of Zmanim? Hi, Gila.
Well, I mean, I guess to answer, well, I don't know this exactly because I don't remember so well. But, you know, the gate Korbanot could be given every single day. Shkalim were only given at certain points in the year, so it's about a timekeeping as opposed to, like, you got to give a Korban Torah, you got to give a Korban.
But let's be honest, there are so many laws that depend on particular times. For example, every Yom Tov has its own Karbana, right? On Shavuot, they bring the Shtei HaLechem. That's not found in the book of Zmanim. That's found in the book of Karbanot, right? So you would think, again, it's not a neat fit. That's the basic point. So Chaim Chernovitz argues that the Rambam puts Shkolim in Zmanim because in Mishnayis, Shkolim is part of Seder Moed. But that sort of goes against everything we've been saying. So I don't know. Okay, other problems that we have over here. Actually, if you look at in the book of Ahava. Okay, so Ahava, the book of love of God. Kriyat Shema, Tfilah, Tfilim Mezuzah Sefer Torah, Tzitzit, Brachot, Tfilot. That all belongs there. Mila, circumcision, doesn't really belong there. But, as Dr. Soloveitchik points out, there's no other place to put it. You see, you can't ask a question on, like, how come it's here if I have no other place. If it's going to be an oddball anywhere you put it, that doesn't make sense. Let's go on.
It shows love for God, love for the Jewish people.
If we're honest, though, almost everything I do shows a love for God. So I could just have one big book called The Love of God. Right?
Some people call it Torah.
Right? Okay. In the book of Kedusha, book number 5. So the Rambam has a big category called Isurei Bia. Isurei Bia is forbidden sexual relations, nida, incest, adultery. Since intermarriage with non-Jews is forbidden, the laws of conversion to Judaism are also included. Now, if I have to write laws of conversion to Judaism, do I put it in the laws of Isurei Bi'ah? Do I assume that the main reason people are converting is so that you should be allowed to have sexual relations with them? Is that what it's about?
Allowed to marry.
You're allowed to marry them, right? But if I have to classify conversion to Judaism, where would conversion belong? So I could argue conversion should belong in Ahava. And if conversion would be in Ahava, so then Mila would make sense in Ahava. Mila is connected to conversion. But for some reason, the Rambam didn't do that. Now, I could have also put conversion in the book of Mada, in the book of knowledge. The book of knowledge is where the Rambam outlines all of the fundamentals of faith they got to believe in. And let's be honest, when you convert to Judaism, that's what you're accepting. It makes no sense, right? We don't know. These are just, I'm outlining problems. The last problem that the Rambam talks about, I'm not going to have a chance, maybe next week, we'll talk about some of the philosophy issues I wanted to talk about tonight. But the last problem is the laws of mourning. The laws of mourning are found in the last book of the Rambam, the book of Shoftim, of Judges. So the book of Judges has the laws of Sanhedrin. Got it. Sanhedrin are judges. Edut, testimony. Right? Testimony is given in front of judges. Mamrim. Mamrim are basically people who rebel against the judge. Right? You have a Zakin Mamre, stuff like that. So far, so good. Avel, mourning. Why is mourning in the book of Judges? Now, I don't know the answer, but the Rambam himself is bothered by this question. What? Okay, so when you die, it's a totally different type of judging. You know, you don't go in front of a Beis Din after you die. You go up to Shemayim and like Hashem asks questions like Nasasav Nasata Ve'emuna, were you honest in business? That's the first question we're getting, by the way. When we go up to heaven, the first question we're getting is whether we were honest in business. April 15th is coming. Right? What?
Not just Hashem, I thought it was angels and everybody.
I have no idea, I haven't been there.
Please come back to tell us.
Right? But why it's in the book of Shoftim, I don't know. The Rambam basically is bothered by this. And the Rambam says, well, since in the Halachos of Avelos, we mention that you don't have Avelos for someone who is killed by Beis Din, so therefore I include in the book of Shoftim.
What?
Right? Perfect. It's Yiddish, right? It doesn't, it's hard to understand. But the funny thing is, the only one that the Rambam himself is bothered by is Shoftim and Avelos. Now, why this happened, I don't know. This is not just a filing problem. These problems are much more fundamental. Right? I could say Avelos doesn't belong anywhere. But over here, it's really wrong. Yeah, Gila.
I just going back to thinking about all the things that you were pointing out. I think Ahava, like, for reading on Ahava, to me, it actually makes the most sense and the least of the filing problems. Because I feel like it's a covenant. Like, you made a covenant with God for the rest of your life, like, or else
okay.
You don't have to think of Allah. But then, I just feel like some of these are,
okay,
like,
okay, so I'll say it like this. Let me ask a question. Kiddush Hashem. Giving up one's life when, you know, you have to. The goyim come to you and they say, either worship Avodah Zarah or we'll kill you. So you have to give up your life. No, they're halachos. That shows a tremendous love of God. That's not in the book of Ahava. That is in the book of Mada. Right? I don't know exactly how the Rambam decided to put what where. It's something, go home, right? It's gonna keep you awake as opposed to the counting sheep that might put you to bed. But try to work on some of these problems. I don't know the answer. But all these problems on some level underscore the brilliance of the system. Right? The fact that I could spend time and find that I got 5 problems, let's say. Okay. But that means that it's really, really working. I got 5 little problems. Okay, so next week maybe I'll talk a little bit more about the Rambam because I didn't finish, and I want to go into the Ravid next week, and have a good night.